America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. By honoring your sacred vocation of nursing, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. At Grand Canyon University, our online RN to BSN, MSN, or DNP degree programs allow you to balance online coursework with local in-person clinical, practicum, or immersion hours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
The other rights remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
And the wolf is at your door.
This episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature and should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. Love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. Patreon members, convicts, Apple subscribers, thank you so much. I hope you are enjoying all your perks and bonuses and commercial-free early releases. Today, we're going to be continuing the State versus Scott Peterson. That's the state of California, y'all. If you haven't listened to the first two episodes, go back and check it out because I think it's all the rage by now. By the time you're hearing this, Scott Peterson's first interview in 20 years from prison will have aired on Peacock. And again, this is the most requested case I've ever had over the years, and I never really got into it for whatever reason. But when I did, holy smoke, it is scorched. And that's why we're naming these episodes Scorched. The State versus Peterson. And when I left you last, the police had responded to Scott Peterson's house. They talked to him a little bit. They noticed a lot of the uniform patrol guys noticed enough inconsistencies and strange things, if you will, that they called their sergeant. Sergeant showed up on the scene and he's like, this is kind of fucked up. Could be a bad situation. And he calls the detectives, right? And I told you when the detectives got there that, they interviewed Scott and briefly about it. He's, I went fishing today, but couldn't tell him what he was going fishing for. Then when asked what kind of lure he used, he said it was some silver thing. And then he comes back later and says, he whipped out that receipt for the boat launch at the marina without being asked. It's just a lot of strange things, right? And he didn't seem concerned. They didn't ask him what they're doing next. And remember this, he never called Lacey's cell phone to see where she was at after that 2:15 p.m. call when he's leaving the marina, if you will. And he just didn't ask any questions, right? It's very suspicious if you're wife who's about to have your son Connor in another month and a half is missing, and it's not looking good, right? But remember, I'm going to tell you, this is long and in-depth, and I'm going to take you places that you haven't heard about, or you probably haven't heard about, because I went through every media source, every type of thing I could find, and it's just scorched on both sides, on Peterson's side and on the prosecution side. All right, so I told you about the detective, homicide detective Al Burkini, and he arrived on the scene and that he noticed several other strange things in the house that, you know, like I told you when he talked to Scott, his demeanor and everything else, and the fact that he later claimed to be fishing for sturgeon. And he was using the wrong type of bait. He only had freshwater gear, and he was saltwater fishing. That doesn't really mean anything by itself other than he's a dumbass. But he comes back and he tells him he's fishing for sturgeon, right? You would think that you would have been prepared to answer the question, what you're fishing for, what you were fishing for on the day that your wife goes missing. But he told him sturgeon later on. But guess what? It wasn't sturgeon season. So he just got it wrong. I don't know if he looked something up or whatever he did. The sturgeon popped into his head. Well, if he went fishing for sturgeon that day, he shouldn't have been. Okay, so that's another inconsistency. But Burkini, as I've done so many times, you're gonna, you know, just kind of take the lay of the land, look at things. You know, you're not totally throwing shade on Scott Peterson yet, but you start from the inside out. Now at this point, we don't know it's a homicide. And she's just missing, right? And remember, Scott never called her in missing. Lacey's father-in-law did. But Burkini's kind of walking through the house, and he gets to the bedroom, and he notices an impression on the bed that was about 5 feet long, and he thought it was odd. It was on the end of the bed. And he thought it looked like the form of a body that had been wrapped up. And it made such an impression upon him that he actually photographed it, or he had it photographed. And that would come into play later on. So they were, again, talking to the neighbors and everything else. And well, one of them says that they were going by and they saw Scott's truck backed up to that door that the uniformed guys noticed that the rug looked like something that had been drug over it, and it was kind of crunched up. And when Scott saw them see that, he stretched it back out, right? Well, one of the persons that walked by and saw him, well, guess what? They saw Scott's truck backed up to that door, and it had never been there before. Or they had, none of them, everybody they asked after that, their neighbors, they were like, no, he's never been there before. Okay, well, that's not illegal to put, you know, park in a different area. But this person, when they saw him, they saw that he was loading 4-foot-tall patio umbrellas into his truck. And when they came back and they asked him about that later on, he said, oh, yeah, well, I took those patio umbrellas to my warehouse and dropped them off. Okay. Well, later on, it was found out that he never took the umbrellas to the warehouse at his work. But guess what? I don't even know how they knew there were umbrellas, y'all, because they testified that the umbrellas were wrapped in individual tarps. Tarps. Why would you wrap your umbrellas in tarps? You put them in the back of your truck. I've hauled an umbrella, poolside umbrellas in the back of my truck. You just tuck it in. They're heavy. Tuck it in, the top side pointing toward your back glass, no big deal. Wrapping in a tarp, that takes a whole lot of fucking time. You have a whole lot more chance of your tarp blowing off, etc. And this neighbor saw this. But guess what time? Between 9:20 and 9:40 a.m. on the morning that she went missing. Okay? The same morning that he went fishing. And they know that the umbrellas were not dropped off at the warehouse because they found them in the back of Scott's truck along with one empty tarp. Interesting. Now, that tarp should have absolutely at some point been seized and taken in evidence and tested for Lacey's DNA. All right, that scores. So that's a fuck up. That I can't find anywhere that they said that they did that. Maybe they did and I got it wrong, but come on, man. As this thing develops and you figure it out, I don't care how many search warrants you have to get to go back or permission to get to go back, that motherfucking, that tarp would have been tested. So, part of Scott's deal was, hey, I went to my warehouse that day, et cetera. And they were like, okay, can we search your warehouse? And Scott said, yeah, you could search it. But it'd be hard for y'all because it doesn't have any electricity. Okay. Possible, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what warehouse you have that you have all your fertilizer and shit in that doesn't have electricity. And well, guess what? I would be right about that. Because when they did serve a search warrant on the warehouse later on, it was determined that Scott was lying about the electricity. And they not only did it have electricity, it had overhead fluorescent lights in the warehouse. And there had never been a power outage reported. They checked with the electric company. The power had been running there. No, we never had a power outage reported. Okay, not looking good for Scott, all right? When they, searched Scott's truck, and I told you about the umbrellas, well, something else is strange. They found concrete debris in the bed of the truck. Figure it out. All right, I have mixed concrete, I've poured concrete. It's one of the worst fucking hard jobs in the world that you could probably ever do. But to have a concrete debris, it tells me that, you had a larger piece of concrete and something broke off of it. So suspicious, yeah, the dude's a fertilizer salesman. He's not a concrete layer, if you will. So, and when they are talking to Scott, they notice he has a small cut on his knuckle. All right. Again, adding up the circumstances, people. So when Scott said he had left home between 9:30 and 10 a.m., again, the phone record showed it was closer to 10, but his neighbor, Karen Servas, S-E-R-V-A-S, it is the one who found Mackenzie, the golden retriever, wandering in the street with the leash, and she is adamant that she found Mackenzie at 10:18 a.m., all right? Meaning that if Lacey was alive when Scott left, Lacey had to disappear, like, within minutes, okay? Phone records show it's closer to 10. She finds the dog at 10:18, well, 15 minutes maybe, that Lacey disappears. You can't get very far in 15 minutes, right? I mean, an average human being, I guess, could walk at a fast walk, maybe, I don't know, close to a mile or a little under less than 15 minutes, but your dog is found right there, and she's big time preggo, right? Again, not looking good for old Scott. So let's go back just a little bit. Now, through the investigation, they come to find out that Scott had bought a boat on December the 9th with $1,400 cash, all right? I have bought so many boats. I used to buy them and sell them. I used to make money off of that. And you I'd buy the boat, and then I'd do a little something to it, and then I'd list it and sell it. Okay. $1,400 cash. And he never registered the boat, and he bought it on December 9th. So that's a couple weeks before Lacey goes missing. And nobody knew about the boat except for Scott. Oh, well, stick with me on that. Nobody else in the family knew about the boat except for Scott. But Scott said that, or some of his supporters say that someone did know about the boat, a guy named Bruce Peterson. Well, yeah, Bruce Peterson knew about it. No relation, y'all. He's not related to Scott. You know why Bruce Peterson knew about it? Because he's the dude that sold the boat to Scott on December the 9th, all right? You know, none of Scott's family or friends, including Guy, Milagy, or Greg Reed, knew about the boat, okay? The first time he uses the boat ever, and this is a 14-foot boat, and I'm going to get to that in a minute, but the first time he uses the boat ever, he decides he's going to take it to the bay an hour and something away and use this 14-foot boat. Now, let me explain that to you for people who don't know a lot about boats. 14-foot boat is the smallest boat you can get besides like a 12-foot bateau for a pond, a regular boat, okay? I mean, you can get those little bitty 8-foot pontoon boats, two-seaters for fishing in ponds. Not in the ocean, not in the bay. 14-fucking-foot boat is so small, it's ridiculous. And I used to have a 14-footer that I would run on the river to check my catfish lines. 14-feet boat on a trailer. And you're going to take it. You said, oh, it's too cold to golf. But you're going to take it to the bay and put that motherfucker in the bay on Christmas Eve. And you're going to use it for the first time. Bro, you don't even know if this thing floats. Right? I mean, unless you took it for a test drive and they didn't say anything about that. This is the first time he used it. Look, I'd be scared to fucking death to go in any bay in a 14-foot boat. If there's any kind of waves or whatever, you're fucked. All right, and a 14-foot boat has to have a very small motor on it, probably no more than a 25 horsepower because it's not rated for bigger than that. Any motor bigger than that would probably sink that boat. You may get a 40 on it, but that would be way too much in my personal opinion. And so the boat that he bought was not made for saltwater fishing, period, okay? And remember he told him, oh yeah, I just decided, on the morning of the 24th, I was going to use it for the first time because it was too cold to go golfing and I'm going fishing. Right. Well, guess what? They proved that Scott bought a 2-day fishing license for December the 23rd and 24th, and he bought that on the 20th of December, 4 days before Lacey goes missing. Yeah. Huge, huge red flag. All right. Now, let me tell you about that. Let's talk about state license. Like in the state of Louisiana, if you're from outside the state of Louisiana, you can buy like a 5-day fishing license or whatever, and it's much cheaper. If you're out of state resident and you buy it, it's expensive as fuck, right? Mississippi and Louisiana used to be in a competition because everybody in Louisiana wants to hunt, deer hunt in Mississippi, and everybody in Mississippi wants to fish in Louisiana. So they started raising the license to like ridiculous amounts, like $2,000 to hunt there for the year. And they started raising the saltwater fishing license to, you know, something ridiculous at $500-$600 where it costs a resident, you know, like $35 for the year. But this dude goes into a store on December 20th. Now, he doesn't buy the right tackle or anything, but he buys a 2-day license to be on the water on the 23rd and the 24th of December, the coldest time of the year, and the smallest boat that you can get. And what other intention do you have? Other than putting your shit in the water on the 23rd or 24th, your license is going to expire. You'll waste your money, right? And Scott didn't quite have it in his head that these motherfuckers are going to do their job. They're going to check and see. I had a fishing license, right? And again, he initially, when questioned, he didn't know what he was going to fish for that day. Came back later on and said, oh, yeah, it's I was fishing for sturgeon. Well, sturgeon were illegal to fish for in December, people. And even more importantly, yeah, he bought some lures and shit whenever he got his license. Well, guess what? He never opened them. Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with a subject?
Now.
Is your child ahead,
real life,
not getting challenged enough in class?
Get an exclusive
IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts,
visit IXL.com/today
while adopting
today
to each child,
to get the
meeting
most
them where they are.
Program
plus,
out there
IXL
at the best
encourages
price.
Students to be curious, empowers them how to choose to learn. Now, Cindy used IXL in the classroom as a teacher and now uses it to homeschool our youngest son in the ninth grade. The videos are what she finds that benefits him most in math because he's a very visual learner. The perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum, IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational game lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving, and everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. Instant grading, helpful progress reporting. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Flexible and personalized. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. It's fun for kids, and kids love IXL's positive feedback, awards, and educational games. And it's trustworthy. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hey everybody, it's Aggo. Listen up, especially you ladies over 40. I've got some good news. It's called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution. It relieves symptoms of menopause, it promotes healthy weight loss and curbs cravings, it improves sleep quality, it reduces bloating and gas, it relieves hot flashes, it can even relieve occasional mood swings, although nothing like that has ever happened in my house. Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalance should take it, but it's perfect for the horrible menopause symptoms that make you put your life on hold. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and code RLRC at checkout for 15% off today.
When they searched and they found it, the lures that he had bought were all still in their containers. Or they come in like, you know, plastic shell with a paper backing on it. He never opened them. I'm pretty sure you can go fishing with no bait or without using your bait, right? And guess what? That 14-foot boat, that with a place where he went and launched the boat, the place he produced the ticket from, the place he went fishing at, was 90 miles away from his home, okay? You're towing a boat. You're driving 90 miles, so that's an hour and a half if you're hauling ass. That's an hour and a half, and you're towing a boat. All adding up, people, stacks up, okay? And he's going to drive that far, leave at 9 o'clock in the morning before he goes to his warehouse to get the boat. So you're leaving 10, 11, whatever, we'll get to that. And then you're going to drive approximately 2 hours one way, and you leave, and you got the same amount of time to drive back, even though you told your sister-in-law you would pick up her fruit basket. And, of course, he didn't have time to do that, right? And so, here's another deal. Why would you put a fucking 14-foot boat in the damn ocean? The bay is basically part of the ocean. All it is salt water that's a little bit protected, okay? And there were nine other places he could have launched his boat on the way to where he launched it. Nine other places that were closer than the 90 miles that he drove, okay? He passed every one of them, and he went to the Berkeley Marina. And he said, but now in the time frame, according to his own time frame, by the time he got there, he launched his boat, he would only fish for less than 1 hour before driving all that way back. And it's not, you know, I don't see anywhere in his history where he's ever owned a boat before. And let me tell you something, launching a boat by yourself, not the easiest thing in the world if you don't know what the fuck you're doing. Loading it back up is even harder. But he did it. And so that cuts down on your fishing time even more, right? All right. Well, you know, it is what it is. So the investigation is going. People are looking. Everybody wants to find Lacey and the unborn Connor alive. So time marches on, and we get into Christmas Day, December 25th, and the Modesto police and firefighters are searching their ass off, and one of the places they search is called Dry Creek, and they just searched it everywhere. They used helicopters equipped with searchlights. That's because it's cold as fuck outside, and if she's close and the dog can't, you know, let's say she fell in the park or she's in the Dry Creek or whatever, you got to try to find her. You can't stop until you find a body. And this we did on Caitlin Adele's case. You don't stop until you find a body or you find the person. You just can't give up. Not especially not in the first few hours and days, because Scott could be telling the truth, right? So they're tearing it up, and they flew all that night with helicopters with lights, and they had cops mounted on horseback, right? That's because you're sitting in a higher position, you can get in the brush and stuff. They used bicycles, bicycle cops. They used all the K-9 units available, right? And they're searching everywhere. They're doing everything that could be done to bring Lacey home, all right? They used water rescue units, right? So boats and the cop boats, right? Those inflatable ones on that kind of looks like rafts. But a total of 30 officers were involved in the search, and that's not all, because everybody that loved Lacey, almost everybody, a lot of volunteers come forward, as they do in any type of situation like this, and they're all looking for Lacey, all right? Loved ones and volunteers. And look, they posted flyers everywhere. You know, I don't know. The Albert Kinney, you know, this shows that they're, even though they may be thinking Scott's fucked up, they're at least they're looking, right? It's still a plausible or a reasonable idea that Lacey may be hurt somewhere or what have you, or could have been killed by, you know, and be laying in the bushes somewhere close. At some point, they hold a press conference, okay? And Detective Albert Kinney said that police did not believe that Lacey decided to leave without contacting her family. It would be out of character for her, all right? Well, that's obvious. I mean, but you know, it's the news. The news has got a hold of it now. They're out there. They're looking. It's a slow time of the year for the news, right at Christmas. I mean, this is it. This is a story. And how does he get more involved in a beautiful young couple and Lacey's pregnant, about to give birth to Connor? So the search rolls on, and as families do, not only they would gather to hold a vigil, okay? And it was organized by Lacey's family and friends. And it's just all, I mean, everything that you ever see in a missing persons case, you know. But yeah, that let's go back to the day she went missing. They brought Scott in for his initial interview and questioning, and they, one of the questions the detective asked him straight up, and he said, "Hey, you know, how's your marriage? It's great, right? And look, he's cool and calm and collected." And they asked him, "Do you have any marriage issues?" And he said, "Nope. Neither of us have ever had affairs." Okay. Problem was, during this interview, every time Scott talked about Lacey, he referred to her using the past tense. All right. If you know Lacey's alive, you can be like, "No, Lacey would do this, da da da." And he said, "Lacey used to." Lacey, everything was in the past tense. Not looking good for Scott, right? So, check this out. When even though Lacey had just been missing for a couple hours, and after Bikini talks to him for the first time, you know what? Instead of asking, "What are y'all doing?" and, you know, "What are the next steps in the investigation?" and all that, you know what Scott does ask him? He asks him for the numbers. He says, "You guys got grief counselors, don't you?" And Bikini, and I'm paraphrasing, Bikini's like, "Yeah." He's like, can I get those numbers for the grief counselors? Lacey's family's going to need them." And he was like, "Well, I mean, yeah, we have them, but you know, we're still looking for Lacey." He's like, "Yeah, but I think they're going to need them, right?" And Lacey had only been missing for a few hours. Fuck me. At that point in time, straight up, I would have made, well, actually, I mean, the search has still got to continue, but he's fucking on the radar, about to blow up. As I mean, Bikini told him, hey, she's only been missing for a couple of hours. And Scott says, and I'll quote this, he said, "I will need those numbers for Lacey's family." All right, let me just read you the conversation. As Peterson was leaving the interview, the initial interview with Brocani, this is the conversation. Scott says, not "What are you doing? What's going on?" or anything else. Scott says, the only question I have is, what about resources available? You saw my mother-in-law tonight. Anyway, and Brocani says, "What do you mean?" Scott says, "Counseling and that kind of thing. Can you give you the numbers, or do I have to search?" Bikini says, "Man, I can give you those numbers. I just don't know. I mean, you probably aren't going to get any answers today." This guy says, "Yeah, of course. And there's not a need to call if we find Lacey in the next days." And Bikini says, "Yeah, I agree. And I'll get you those numbers." And Scott says, check this out. Scott says, "I will need them." Bikini says, "Okay, I'll get you the number for victim services." And y'all, at this point, Lacey had only been missing for 6 fucking hours. Hours. I can't even, you know, a lot of this shit, you can say, well, it's plausible this way or that way. I do not understand. But you're not asking you know, what's going on, what resources, whatever, what's the next step, should I sit by the phone, whatever, whatever. The only thing you asked for was numbers for the grief counselors. And even after he's like, hey, man, you know, you're not going to get any answers today. He's thinking it's been 6 hours. And Scott says, I will need them. All right. So back to interviewing the neighbors. I know I'm kind of skipping around on stuff, but I'm going to get to the score stuff in a minute. But the neighbors I told you about, Tara Venable and Amy Kirkbaum, they told the cops on Christmas Day, when they're talking to them again, that the curtains on the Peterson home had been closed all day on the 24th. And they said that has never happened when Lacey is home. All right, it's unusual. You take all these things, you take each piece of nugget and file it away, all right, and put the puzzle together later. But they also told the investigators they were sad for Lacey because the husband was away so much for overnight trips. Okay, that's neither here nor there, right? But they also, at this time, they also said they had not seen Lacey walking for quite some time because her pregnancy, and I told you about that. And again, Kara Savas put Mackenzie, the Peterson dog, away around on the morning of the 24th at 10:18 a.m. But she said she didn't see anything else suspicious in the neighborhood that morning. And Karen also talked to Scott on the evening of the 24th when he was looking for Lacey. And Scott told her he spent the day golfing, not fishing. One thing that never changes people is the truth. And you've heard me say that 1,000 times. Huge again. Again, they're taking all these things in context. And the more they interview, the more they dig, the harder it is for them to get off of Scott Peterson. Right? Naturally so. And I would have done the same thing. Although you're still taking calls, you're still doing searching, you're still keeping hope alive as an investigator. Well, that's for Uniform and everybody else to do, the other detectives who aren't lead on the case. As lead motherfucker on this case, I'm about to get me some ass, right? And it's going to be Scott Peterson's until I can't. Maybe it's all proven away, but so far it ain't looking good. And according to Ron Gransky, Scott left that press conference they held. It was on Christmas Day, y'all. And Scott left the Christmas Day press conference for Lacey because he did not like reporters asking questions about him. All right. I'll tell you what, if it's my wife missing, the cops aren't going to get but a few words in. I'm going to be one of those motherfuckers crying on TV saying, please bring her home, you know. But she's a wife and a soon-to-be mother, and you got my baby, and da-da-da-da-da. Scott jets, and he didn't want questions asked about him, and you're going to find out why in a few minutes. So on Christmas Day also, they bring Scott in to interview him a second time. Typical, right? You get your first statement, you do investigation, and then you got questions that come up, like I've already told y'all about. So you bring him back in, and they interview him again. And this time it's by a guy named Detective Grogan. And he kind of, you know, hemmed Scott up as he left the press conference. And, hey, man, why are you leaving or whatever, right? But anyway, they asked him to take a polygraph, and Scott refused, right? And we all know, y'all know I'm a state licensed board certified polygraphist, and they're not admissible in court, but they are if both sides agree to the expert testimony, but that's never going to happen. But you always, let me tell you, the polygraph, it's a great tool. And even if the person refuses to take the polygraph, which is their right, they don't have to take it, you just want to float that question up there to see what their response is, right? 99% of the people who are innocent will say, fuck yeah, I'll take the polygraph. And you probably won't even polygraph them after that. But I always say there's two kinds of people that take my test. The ones who take it because they can pass it, or the ones who take it because they know if they don't take it, it's going to make them look guilty, right? Or it's going to keep more suspicion on them. Well, guess what? Scott refused, and it definitely tightened up the suspicion on him from an investigative standpoint. And, made the detective seem even more suspicious to him. After the interview, Scott called Detective Rakini and asked for an update on the search for Lacey. And he said, just check this out. He didn't say, how many people and where are they at, da-da-da-da. One of the questions he specifically asked him was, have you used cadaver dogs yet? And Rakini replied, cadaver dogs are used for sniffing out dead bodies. Have you given up hope on finding Lacey alive? Scott didn't answer. And Lacey had been missing for less than 24 fucking hours. Scorched, Scott. All right. Ask for the grief counselors was bad. Yeah, all the other stuff. People seeing you loading the tarps and, finding one tarp, empty tarp in the back of your truck. You cutting out on the press conference and all that shit is bad. Everything you've done is fucking shitty from a criminal mind standpoint. It's scorched. But when you're talking to, and by Scott's on the mission, he liked that at that time, he liked Detective Rakini, right? Where he didn't like Grogan so much. But instead of asking any other question you could ask, the grief counselor shit is bad. I'm going to need those numbers. Then this is 6 hours. Less than 24 hours, he's asking the lead detective on the case, have they started using cadaver dogs yet? Detective says, hey, we use those for dead bodies, right? Scorched, Scott. That's scorched. It's fucked up. That's your unborn son. You made that baby. And not to mention your wife. But this was the only time ever that Scott contacted law enforcement to ask about the investigation into Lacey's disappearance. Ever. That's super scorched. All right. I'm going to be blowing your motherfucking phone up. I'm going to be melting it. I've had this look on cases, okay? This is not, usually you're still with the motherfuckers, with the family members and keeping somebody outside of their house in case she comes home and all this. And you never, ever, ever called and asked what's the status of the investigation. And the one time you do call, you say, have you used cadaver dogs yet? And the Detective Rakini says, cadaver dogs are used for sniffing out dead bodies. Have you given up hope on finding Lacey alive? Scott never answers. He never calls law enforcement again. Scorched. Okay? Now stick with me because I'm going to do some scorch on his side, but there's going to be some scorch shit on the cop side too, so we'll get to it. That's the only time, y'all. Anyway, in the days immediately after her disappearance, and these are just more small things that are, you could explain away. They're fucked up, though. He ordered, the Playboy Channel. I guess that's neither here nor there. But, it's not neither here nor there. If my pregnant wife is missing my soon-to-be-born son, who I've sat there and I've looked at his pee-pee on camera and I've heard his heartbeat, and she's been carrying him for over 7.5 months. I'm pretty sure I'm not ordering porn to jack off to. All right. So I don't know. But at some point during this time, Lee, Scott's dad, got him an attorney. Right. I remember I told you, that's scorched too. But you really can't. You could just say he flipped open the phone book for whatever reason to the Yellow Pages and ended on defense attorneys. But that's bad. When you put it into the total puzzle, anyway, then Scott's dad got him an attorney. Back on the polygraph, Scott, when they first interviewed him, they asked him to take a polygraph. He said, yeah, I'll take a polygraph. It was later when he was leaving the press conference when they asked him to take the polygraph again. He was like, nah, I'm not doing that shit. So, in fact, he said that his dad told him not to take a polygraph for any reason. Okay, whatever. I'm not taking a polygraph. I probably would if I knew I could pass it. But I would, you know, really, the polygraph is an interrogation tool. We all know that. But if you're innocent, and then it really does help law enforcement because they can clear you and they can focus on other shit. But they can't get off of Scott Peterson because he's fucking, you know, everything he's done to this point makes him scorched. All right, let's get start on back on December 26th. And on the 26th, Lacey's friends, Stacy and Lori, were interviewed. And Stacy said she thought it was strange that on Christmas Day, now this is the day after, Stacy says the day after, maybe probably less than 24 hours since Lacey's been missing, Scott is vigorously vacuuming and re-vacuuming and vacuuming the laundry room area of his home over and over again. Okay? Now, remember, I told you that Lacey kept a fastidious house. And she kept it clean. Yeah, you know, so the mop bucket being dumped out and the mops, that's suspicious because Lacey, I mean, everybody testified her shit was just squeaky clean. But this dude, now they hadn't hit it. They hadn't come with a search warrant yet, right? But he's vacuuming his ass off in the one area of the house. Figure it out. Doesn't look good, okay? And, you know, in fact, Stacy's boyfriend, it was a retired highway patrolman. And, you know, they were all helping in the searches and everything else. And Scott never spoke to him. Now, they were all friends, right? They socialized together. They, you know, hung out together, et cetera. They lived across the street. And they said that Scott was carefully avoiding him. And specifically, like, dude walks in the room, Scott leaves, right? So, both Stacy and Lori, in separate interviews, they said they believed that Scott was responsible for Lacey disappearing. And I don't know, y'all, I'm just telling you what they said. But and they both women also confirmed that Lacey had stopped taking those walks or walking McKenzie early in December because of her pregnancy, right? And on the December the 26th in the afternoon, the Medina family, who lived directly across the street from the Petersons, they come home, right? They've been on visiting motherfuckers for Christmas and all that stuff. They come home and they find their house has been ransacked, right? And now they had left at 10:32 a.m. This is their own testimony. They left their house at 10:32 a.m. on December 24, Christmas Eve. And they went and stayed with family or wherever they went and stayed. And they come home on the afternoon of the 26th, right? And they find their shit's tore apart. And they stole the burglars or whoever did it, stole a safe and some money and other valuables. So what does this tell you? That their house had to be robbed, between, according to their testimony, between the day that Lacey went missing and the 26th. So in a 2-day time frame, all right? Woody Overton, I always tell you there's no such thing as a coincidence, but a lady named Diane Jackson was interviewed, and she said that she saw three suspicious brown, not black men, but brown, brownish colored men, behind a van around 11:40 a.m. on December the 24th on the street outside the Medina house. Now, this is across the street from the Petersons. And she said, when she reported this, she said she didn't think anything of it until she heard the news that they had been robbed. Okay? All in the same time frame that Lacey's missing. I don't know, y'all. This is where it starts to get a little scorched. And it'll definitely blow up on fucking fire nuclear if I was a defense later on. But let's stick with it. So back to Lacey. The search is continuing, and now they got over 900 people involved looking for her. Community officials and police, and of course all the citizens, right? But they directly participated in the search, and this is before the media fucking went crazy about this case, right? And told the story to the whole world. Now remember that this becomes bigger than OJ. But you got 900 people looking for, over 900 people involved in trying to find Lacey. Initially, they offered a $25,000 reward, and later they increased it to $250,000, and then didn't work. You know what? Come forward, give us any information that leads us to finding Lacey, and we'll give you $500,000, right? Let me tell you something. Screech talk, S-C-R-E-E-T-S. That's what anybody on the street will tell you, the streets talk. And you better believe if somebody fucking knew something, they coming forward and getting that $500,000, right? They're going to come forward if their best friend said, we kidnapped Lacey because she confronted us doing a robbery, whatever, that somebody's going to fucking talk for $500,000. And they're going to get themselves some immunity in it, and you find out what happens to Lacey. $500,000? Fuck yeah. They're going to talk. But nobody did. Y'all, they put up posters everywhere, and then they tied up blue and yellow ribbons, and they passed out flyers. People standing on corners passing out flyers, going to the grocery stores, everywhere. They set up a LaceyPeterson.com website, and that was launched by her friends and her by a friend's husband, a friend of Lacey's husband who knew how to do websites. And friends and family and volunteers set up a command center at the nearby Red Line Hotel because they were getting so much information in, they figure like, hey, one of them had the genius enough to say, look, we need to get, besides what the cops are doing, and the cops are still doing their job, they were like, let's get this shit together. Let's get it organized. We got over 900 people searching now. They're bringing in all this information, so let's set up a command center. The Red Line Hotel graciously let them use one of their conference rooms, whatever, and they did it. Look, they had all this information coming in, and check this out. Over 1,500 volunteers signed up to distribute information and help search. So now we jump from 900 to 1,500, almost double. Where's Scott at, y'all? Crickets. Scorched as a motherfucker, Scott. You getting hotter and hotter. And he didn't participate. And they said he showed a lack of concern for Lacey's disappearance. And he was more excited about food that was delivered to the volunteers. Now, he went to the volunteer center at the Red Line, and he would put in an appearance as you would expect someone to do, but he didn't, okay, what are y'all doing now? What's this and what's this and what's that? He kind of like was aloof. This is what they said. Aloof, didn't ask questions about what was going on, but when the food showed up, he got excited, right? I guess he needed to build his energy back up for the Playboy channel. All right. I don't know. I'm going to stop it right there. Y'all, listen, I got to take this step by step because it's so fucked up. And we are just really getting into it. But it's scorched. And I'm recording this before they released that interview on the 24th on Peacock, and I can't wait to watch it. I'm sure he's been practicing his ass off. He's had 20 years to try to not make the mistakes that I'm going to tell you about in this investigation, in this case that happened. And I know it sounds like I'm all against Scott, but I'm not going to be. I'm building it up to tell you the things that not only Scott did that were bad, but the prosecution fucked up. The cops fucked up some stuff. They scorched it, okay? So I want you to stick with me, and we're going to continue it. Love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. Real Life Real Crime Community app. Go check it out. We got forums and a merch store and everything else. The discussion boards about Peterson, all kinds of stuff. Everything Real Life Real Crime in one spot. I go there first before I check everything else. Again, patrons, convicts, Apple subscribers, thank you so much, and hoping you're enjoying your new bonus content. I love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. LOPA, Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency. You do not have to be from Louisiana to sign up to be an organ donor. You can be a lifer from Antarctica. If you got internet up in Antarctica, go to LOPA.org. Fill out the questionnaire, take a couple minutes, become an organ donor, save lives, y'all. Be a hero. And know the chances that you're ever going to be selected for that process are almost non-existent. It's a very, very slim chance. It's a certain criteria that has to be met at a certain horrible time in people's lives. But if it happens to me, they can use my shit. I don't care if I can make somebody else live. And I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And until next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to and during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
And the wolf is at your door. Your running's over, that's for sure.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less cards going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.